From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This year, Illinois became the home of two new national parks. We've already discussed New Philadelphia in central Illinois, the first town in the country to be registered and planned by an African-American. Today, we'll hear about the other new park in the Pullman area of Chicago, site of the rail car manufacturer and an important location in both Black history and labor history. That's coming up later in the show. But first, you've no doubt heard that former President Jimmy Carter is nearing the end of his life. At age 98, he's already the longest-living president in American history. But in recent years, he's had a number of health challenges, including cancer and several falls. Last month, he decided to forego further medical treatment in favor of hospice care. Carter campaigned a lot in Illinois as he was seeking the Democratic nomination for president in 1976, and he credited the state as important to his victory, as in this tape from the archives of our partner station, WUIS, in Springfield.
It's a great pleasure for me to come back to Springfield, to come back to Illinois. As you well know, during the long, very difficult primary season, there were a few states, when they cast their vote, that gave me a tremendous boost to a nomination for President of the United States. And as you well know, when the returns came in from Illinois, we swept the whole state in the popular vote, and I think out of 84, 85 candidates that I had entered for delegates, about 60 or 65% of them won, and I want to thank you for giving me that big step toward being your next president. I won't ever forget it.
Carter's legacy is, to say the least, complex. His post-presidency has been generally held up as exemplary, supporting housing in America, fighting disease overseas, and promoting peace around the world. His presidency, however, has been described as a failure, lurching from an energy crisis through a recession to the hostage crisis in Iran. But could it be that Carter's presidency itself is underrated? That's the argument put forth by the journalist Jonathan Alter in his Carter biography called His Very Best. I spoke about it with Alter in October of 2020, and given the vigil for the former president, we thought we'd revisit that conversation today. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome to the 21st.
I'm glad to be here. It's good to be with old Illinois folks.
Yes. Well, let's talk about Jimmy Carter now. You have talked about him, and I think we can draw a bridge between the current moment and President Carter. You've described him as the un-Trump. Can you talk about that? What about him is sort of a diametrically opposite in your view?
Well, pretty much everything.
Where do we start? Okay, for the rest of the hour, we'll just talk.
Yeah, I mean, at one point I asked him, you know, I had interviewed him about a dozen times, and we were in a period in our relationship where I could send him checking questions and additional questions by email, and I'd send him 10 questions, go out for a walk, and come back an hour later, and he would have answered all 10 of them. Sometimes the answers were short. So I said, you know, you and Donald Trump were both elected as outsiders. Do you have anything in common with him? And I got back a one-word answer, no. And it's true that his Carter's honesty, his decency, his attention to detail, his interest in planning, his accountability, his intelligence, everything makes him the un-Trump. But it's mostly on the integrity front that I focus on it. You know, you mentioned that I'm a contributor on MSNBC. On June 16th, 2015, when Trump came down the escalator, I was at the Carter Library doing my research for this biography, which is the first biography of him. And, you know, so I was really down in the documents. And MSNBC texts me and says, we need you to get to a studio. Trump's announcing. I go over there. He gives this speech about Mexican rapists, and it terrified me. And it wasn't any great insight on my part. I immediately on the air recognized it as dangerous, but I also felt the toxicity of it. My real memory though is when I went back to the library and I'm going through the Carter papers again. And it was as if the papers kind of washed away the toxins that I had just experienced. And that's what happened for the last 5 years. Anytime I wanted a vacation, an escape from Trump, I could always find it in Jimmy Carter. And in that sense, he really is an inspiration for lighting our way back to a sense of decency in our politics. And I've got all of his flaws are in the book. You know, it's warts and all, but there is this core decency. And I think the reason it's selling is, you know, I think it has less to do with my reviews or whatever, or the Andy Warhol cover, which is appealing to people, than it does just for this thirst on the part of people to read about somebody who was decent. And then there are other just more specific contrasts, like Carter was the first president to release his taxes. And his accountant said, well, on the peanut warehouse, you had these deductions, you don't actually owe anything. He said, I can't release taxes where I haven't paid taxes. You know, you only owed a little bit, more than $750. But he said, you know, this doesn't look right. So he didn't take certain deductions he was owed so that he would pay more in taxes. And then every president since him released their taxes until Trump. In some cases, Carter did things that made other things possible. So Trump would never have been impeached if it wasn't for Jimmy Carter, because in addition to many, many pieces of legislation, 14 major pieces of environmental legislation, the first clean energy in this country, so many other things that are not known about him and why he's an underrated president. In addition to all of that, there was the Ethics in Government Act and the Inspector General Act of 1978. And these two bills created the first whistleblower protections and the first inspectors general. And Trump would not have been impeached without both of them. So not to mention FISA courts, and the list goes on and on. FEMA.
Yeah.
Carter established FEMA, not just the Departments of Education and Energy, but you know, the disaster relief. If he were president now, we would not be in this pickle.
I want to go to the phones now. We have a call from Nancy in Tinley Park. You're on with Jonathan Alter. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jonathan. Hi, nice to speak with you.
Hi, Nancy.
Oh, wonderful. I read parts of the book, but I haven't read the whole book that you wrote on Jimmy.
Well, I'm glad that you have it. That makes me very happy.
Do you have a question for Jonathan?
Oh, God. Jimmy Carter was a wonderful president. And I remember that way back in the day. And he was just so remarkable. And his honesty and his integrity, it spoke for itself.
Yeah, I think it did. And that's, you know, that is integrity and peace were really what he was all about, both as president and a former president. So I don't say that he belongs on Mount Rushmore, you know, and I don't skimp at all on, you know, the Iran hostage crisis and the bad economy, which was not really his fault. But, you know, he did make a number of mistakes in the way he managed the White House. So all of that is in the book. But at the end of the day, there is this core decency and integrity and vision for the future. So I ended up concluding that he was a political failure and maybe a stylistic failure in some ways. You know, he was crushed by Ronald Reagan in 1980, but he was a far-sighted and substantive success. And that required looking at the record. But what really ended up also interesting me so much was just this almost novelistic quality of his epic life, you know, barefoot boy, no indoor plumbing, no electricity. And he is in the Jim Crow South, where the local sheriff is using cattle prods on 14-year-old girls black girls who dare to protest. And, you know, his navigating all this, not always well, but learning as he's going along on this journey, which is also a journey of faith. And I just kind of felt that it was so much more than his presidency and even his, you know, revolutionary post-presidency, that it was this whole 96-year life that is just a great American story. And that's what I was trying to convey.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that call, Nancy. And I want to ask about one of the things that I thought was interesting in your book. You write about the 1976 election, and one of Carter's feats there was uniting the different factions of the Democratic Party, in some ways cementing some of the coalitions that still hold today. So you describe the Democratic National Convention in 76 as having these improbable juxtapositions, George Wallace and Coretta King, Mayor Daley and Gene McCarthy, and the orchestra playing We Shall Overcome. Can you talk about the feat of unifying a divided Democratic Party and what lessons there might be for Democrats in 2020 and beyond?
Well, yeah, it was a love fest in 1976, especially compared to 1980 when Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter in the Democratic primaries and split the party. And Carter, when I asked him, you know, what his biggest failure was as president, he said that he didn't attend more to the Democratic Party. So this is something that Joe Biden, if he's elected, is going to have to watch, you know, because there are these schisms in the Democratic Party that have been papered over in this effort to defeat President Trump. And they will all reappear next year. And it's the president's job and other Democrats to keep those policy disputes within bounds. Otherwise, you rip apart the party and weaken it. So there's a real lesson there from what happened with Carter. But there were other historic things that happened in 1976 that were not fully recognized at the time. So Carter was from Georgia, and George Wallace was also running for president that year for the third time. And when Carter beat Wallace in the Florida primary and then in a couple of other Southern primaries, that was the end of Wallace's political career. And more important, that was the end of the racist wing of the Democratic Party. So in all the years since 1976, racism has no place in the Democratic Party. And we only have one political party currently that has a racist wing, and it's not the Democratic Party. That's not an opinion, that's a piece of fact. you know, that doesn't mean there aren't some racists who are Democrats, and that doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of Republicans who aren't racists. But, you know, in terms of having a part of the party that appeals on race, that ended after Carter beat Wallace that year.
You know, I also want to ask you about, I mean, because we only have about 4 minutes left in our conversation. There's so much more to talk about, but I'm going to have to let a lot of that go. But I mean, we talked about, you know, Carter being buffeted by events, right? There's inflation, the oil shock, Iranian hostage crisis, Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, but he also has this personal style that comes across to some as cold, maybe a little overly technocratic. And then there's this malaise speech, which is fascinating because it doesn't actually involve the word malaise. You paint the context of it, of, you know, Skylab disintegrating, raining parts onto Australia, New York going bankrupt, disco demolition at Comiskey Park in Chicago, platform shoes even. Can you talk about, you know, how much of Carter's political failure was owed to Carter and how much was it owed to events that were outside of his control?
I think it was a combination. He disdained politics much more than was healthy for him. You know, Rosalynn Carter, his very formidable wife, who was nice enough to share the steamy love letters that Jimmy wrote her from the Navy, she was the more political of the two. And she was always telling him, don't do this now, it's not popular, wait till the second term. And he was, no, we got to do this now, it's right for the country. And the politics will take care of themselves. Well, they didn't. And he eventually got swamped by events and by some of his own political ineptitude. And so, but, you know, a historian's job is not just to assess whether they were popular in their time. Harry Truman was very unpopular when he left office, even more unpopular than Carter. But to look at what they achieved and how did they look over the horizon for what was in the interest of the American people. So my book starts with him putting solar panels on the roof of the White House in 1979. And, you know, when I interviewed Barack Obama about Carter, he said, by the way, that's not in the first printing, it's in the audio book, but he got to me pretty late in the process. He got back to me. You know, he said that among the things that Carter did beyond human rights, which had a huge impact on the democratization of the world, was taking renewable energy from what Obama called the counterculture into the mainstream American culture. And now it's the future of the American economy. And this process was begun by Jimmy Carter. And I was kind of stunned to learn that if he'd been reelected, he would have begun to address climate change in his second term. And that adds an almost tragic dimension to his defeat at the hands of Ronald Reagan in 1980.
My conversation with Jonathan Alter from October of 2020. The book is His Very Best, Jimmy Carter, A Life. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.